The award-winning cover of How Can You Be in Two Places at Once was my design.
The President of the United States is named Schickel Gruber.
I'm going out there, Maury! Help me into this parachute!
Oh, no, honey, you can't go out there. It's too late,
I'm telling you. Zip me up! It's never too late, Maury. I'm going out there because I'm bringing the war back home!
All right, boys! All right, calm down now! Here she is! That lovely piece of cake we've all been waiting for! Miss Lily Lamont!
We're bringing the war back home!
A nod to Soviet-style propaganda parades. My original idea was instead of missiles going down a wide avenue, there would be giant toothbrushes. Well, that got changed, but we loved dressing up and being photographed on the stone veranda of an unfinished Armenian church on Wilshire Boulevard downtown.
Johnny Fresno, you Armenian devil, get your paws off me!
Above that, we laid in giant propaganda photos of Marx and Lenin, except that it's Groucho Marx and the Beatles' John Lennon, both of whom graciously agreed to give us permission to use their images. After the disillusionment and the dissolution of the Soviet bloc, a breakaway Georgian republic, Abkhazia, hired an artist who created a postage stamp pirated from our comedic take on All Hail Marx and Lenin. The stamp was released in 1994 and advertised in America, even though if you stuck it on a letter, no one would deliver it.
It cost me a full Albert Grossman. It's very expensive.
Really? How many Grossmans was that?
All that with 300 bushels of Grossmans. Just to buy a nickel stamp to give to General Westmoreland
but
to deliver
nothing
across
beat
town.
The
I bought a dozen. It had birds on the left and a peace symbol and the word love on the right. We didn't mind since it was going for a good cause. Revolution.
Think you could go three rounds with this water heater sailor? Looks easy, but sealed to the back of this metal mother is a radar-activated stamping and seizing module that'll keep a man punching until he's drunk with power. A man like you.
But I do love the post office, which is a bit of a dichotomy because I cannot believe at this age I have friends that when they raise the price of a stamp, my friends will go insane. Yeah, young people in their 30s and 40s. It's not old people on a budget. 30-year-olds.
Oh, my God, they raised the price of stamps. Jesus Christ, this is highway robbery. This federal government, this.
Really? It's 49 cents. You're angry about that? Because I feel the exact opposite way. I cannot believe to this day that I can walk into a building with a piece of paper in my hand and look at a full-grown adult and go, hey, 49 cents, will you take this to Alaska?
As collectors, we all have a fantasy of finding undiscovered treasure, of putting the puzzle pieces together, of having something that everybody else appreciates.
The essence of collecting, whether it's stamps or coins or anything else, is to bring order from disorder, to put something together.
Stamps cover a number of different subject matters, and it's an opportunity to learn about so many different things.
Collecting stamps is fun and it's kind of engrossing. Like, once you start, you can't really stop.
I was interested in collecting stamps because my dad also collected stamps when he was young.
Stamp collecting is pretty cool because anyone can do it.
I was born and raised in Chile in South America, and as a schoolboy, I began collecting stamps. We moved to the United States when I was 11 years old, and the connection to my stamps was a way to still have that link to my heritage, the history of my country. All my materials that I collect are kind of esoteric. Most of it comes from relationships with friends and fellow collectors. I've shared with others, others have shared with me, found my little treasures, but I also found hundreds of people with whom I correspond, I spend time with. That true community is something that I really, really treasure.
There's so many different stamps, like any topic you want.
I have a lot of stamps from every country in the world.
This one's funny because it has a big head, and I like that they're interesting to look at.
I was introduced to stamp collecting through one of my cousins. We started going to first day of issue ceremonies as well as stamp shows together. Stamp collecting does involve going out and meeting interesting people. That is what is so exciting about collecting. It broadens the mind. In addition to being a philatelist.
Well, okay, then we could take the shortcut through Frogtown.
And drop your load on the giant toad. We give double discounted multiple identity stamps.
Alright, we could stop off at Pop's and dig some jugs.
Some what?
Oh, that Louise Wong's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare from.
Aw, not now, Mudhead. They need me at the last meeting of the Philatelist Club.
I'm also a genealogist. And I have used stamps to chart the journey that my family has taken. My early ancestors came from Guinea-Bissau to the Bahamas and then Key West. There's absolutely no price for what I've learned from my stamps.
I have a large space collection. That's like my number one. Probably more this than anything. I have a lot of animals. This is like reptiles. This is dogs and cats. This one was about the first dog to go into space, and that like mixes my two collections of space and animals and dogs. I think that's cool about it.
On the seventh tablet is the first eyewitness account of a space trip told by Enkidu. Yeah. He flew for 4 hours, held in the brazen talons of an eagle.
Up front, about 12 seats up, is playing on this postage stamp size screen hanging above us, Downhill Racer.
I got started as a 8 or 9 year old, rode my bike to the local stamp shop buying 5 and 10 cent stamps. Stamp collecting is a very satisfying hobby, to see that it's a collection as opposed to just pieces of paper, to know that it's something that you've embedded a lot of your own time and effort into is a very satisfying reward. I decided to collect everything from 1847 to 1920. I collected the most complete collection of U.S. stamps ever. The Z-Grill is important because there's only one in public hands, and whoever had it had the chance to have the complete collection of U.S. stamps. It happened that the Z-Grill was in the hands of Don Sunderman.
Bill Gross wanted to add my stamp to his collection, and I wanted to keep my stamp. I loved my stamp, and I just wanted to keep it.
But I had a sense that he might be willing to give it up if he got something more spectacular.
The Jenny plate block is coming up for auction, and it's only sold a few times in my career. Bill Gross proposed buying the plate block and trade it for my 1 cent Z-Grill.
It formed a complete collection, so to me, it was complete success in philately.
I like collecting horses. I have like just a huge album of that from like all over the world.
I think covers are cool because sometimes they have like letters inside, and of course it's like so cursive I can't read them, but they're just cool to collect too.
Love you. You're a obt shoved fuddles. Dear Nabby, darling Nabby, thanks for the pomegranates. Spunky loves them and will be sitting up soon, I hope. As for the excellent porcelain astrolabe, it has to be, there's an E in there, astrolabe, yes, which miraculously arrived in precise working condition after its perilous journey round the P. I set it up directly, and having once aligned it upon the celestial doggy, the sight so roused me that I was seized by a transport of scientific rapture, and whilst a happy prisoner of this unhappy state, I fell upon my glorious machine and knocked it perforce out down the kitchen stairs, carrying faithful Bunky, Spunky, with it. You can imagine my confusion. But quid Malberg in Plano, consternation turned to lucidation. period there. Could this be the solution to our problems, both personal and scientific? Howsoever, a devilishly natural principle of science had revealed itself, exclamation point. And through my quivering quill, I present it to you thus, quote, if you push something hard enough, it will fall over, end quote. So little did this console poor Spunky that I was compelled to lie on her for at least a fortnight.
If you push something hard enough, it will fall over. Fudd's first law of opposition.
My favorite kind of stamps are Nigerian stamps with birds on them. I love birds. That's why I love the stamps.
Anything that fascinates an individual in terms of collecting can be done, you know, relatively inexpensively. Cars, flowers, the Civil War, Mickey and Minnie and other Disney characters. It's a wonderful way to express your own interests or your own particular enjoyment and sharing with family and friends.
In the 15-cent dark green from the 1893 Columbian Exposition issue, Columbus announcing his discovery, the faces of the three courtiers receiving the news at the right-hand side of the stamp had been subtly altered to express uncontrollable fright. In the 3-cent Mothers of America issue, put out on Mother's Day 1934, the flowers to the lower left of Whistler's mother had been replaced by Venus's flytrap, belladonna, poison sumac, and a few others Oedipa had never seen. In the 1947 postage stamp centenary issue, commemorating the great postal reform that had meant the beginning of the end for private carriers, the head of a Pony Express rider at the lower left was set at a disturbing angle unknown among the living. The deep violet 3-cent regular issue of 1954 had a faint, menacing smile on the face of the Statue of Liberty. The Brussels exhibition issue of 1958, including in its aerial view of the U.S. Pavilion at Brussels and set slightly off from the other tiny fairgoers, the unmistakable silhouette of a horse and rider. There were also the Pony Express stamp Cohen had showed her on her first visit, the Lincoln 4-cent with U.S. Potsage, the sinister 8-cent airmail she'd seen on the tattooed sailor's letter in San Francisco.
Once, he convinced me he had rid his home of ants by talking to them, a trick he'd learned from the Hopi Indians.
Did you know that Indians can be in two places at once? That they can change into animals?
On the 7th tablet is the first eyewitness account of a space trip told by Enkidu. Yeah. He flew for 4 hours, held in the brazen talons of an eagle. This is how his story goes, literally.
He said to me, look down at the land.
Look out below.
What does it look like?
Ants.
Look at the sea. How does it seem to you?
Wet.
And the land was like a mountain, and the sea was like a lake. And again he flew for 4 hours and said to me, look down at the land. What do it look like? Look at the sea. How do it seem to you?
Wet.
And the earth was like a garden, and the sea like the water channel of a garden.
What channel is we on?
And he flew higher yet another 4 hours and spake, look down at the land. What does it look like?
Ants!
Let's take the jetpacks.
Cool!
Man, the people look like ants from up here.
They are ants, Michael. They are ants.
Look at the sea. How does it seem to you?
Wet!
And the land looked like porridge, and the sea like a water trough.
I have been to Sapporo. I have been to Japan. I have eaten the Japanese cooking.
Ants!
I have had the experience of eating a Japanese cooking.
What?
I have seen the kabuki.
Ants!
I have met Mr. Yamada.
Wet!
Sometimes I go to Taiwan.
Wet!
Sometimes I see kabuki plays.
With ants!
Sometimes I meet with Mr. Yamada.
Got you, Aunt, Mr. Yamada.
Tomorrow I can go to Sapporo. Next year I can go to Taiwan.
I want a Taiwan on.
I can always...
Get under this eagle, baby.
Japanese.
Keep you out of the rain.
Cooking.
At the end of the school year, our teacher ran out of things to teach us. So she read us a book about Dr. Doolittle. Up until then, I had never found reading something worth doing. I didn't care about Dick and Jane. And my parents were always reading me terrifying tales from the Bible, or else stories about imperiled animals. I saw nothing to gain from that skill. But learning how to talk with animals? That was worth doing. Give me a book!
There's a saying that claims, the more I know about people, the more I love animals. This couldn't be any truer for the much-loved character Dr. Doolittle.
Why do dogs sniff each other's butts?
That's just kind of our way of shaking hands.
Son, stop talking to the dog. She doesn't understand a word that you're saying.
The Good Doctor started life as a book your grandparents read when they were young. Your parents probably saw the 1967 film. This incarnation stars Eddie Murphy. The three versions have little in common, except that Dr. Doolittle has the magic power to communicate with animals.
Oh, my back hurt.
I'm dreaming right now.
You're talking, and I understand you.
Those guys in my dorm told me that stuff wouldn't affect me. Now, 15 years later, this shit's not happening to me.
Polynesia, I want you to teach me everything you know. What? 2,000 languages? Certainly. We'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
But it took me over 100 years.
Then we'll start at 7 o'clock. There's not a moment to lose. Matthew, think what it would mean if I could talk to the animals. Just imagine it, chatting to a chimp in chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting to a cheetah. Oh, what a neat achievement that would be. If we could talk to the animals, learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea.
In reality, I found out that all spiders want to talk about is flies. He looked old, but as healthy as one could hope for one so beaten by life on the streets. His long legs were wrapped up in sheets of some kind, and his old slippers slapped on the linoleum with its faded flowers of tropic days gone past. Spiders! You can have them, he said. All they want to talk about is fly futures, fly margins, stockpiling flies, buying and selling flies, transporting flies, breeding and raising flies for profit, slaughtering flies, pricing flies, triple witching hours of flies, loaning flies, fly rates, borrowing against flies, building equity in flies, governing flies, managing flies, training flies, promoting flies to management positions, self-help for flies, paroling flies, keeping flies from smoking crack, educating flies, keeping flies in their place, and of course, eating flies. He paused for a long moment.
Well, Mr. President, it's the bees and spiders again. They stole my food stamps and sold them to the rats. And I tried to get down to my car for to honk the horn for help, but the snakes have gotten it for the cockroaches. I go back upstairs, but the spiders have jammed the police lock. I ain't been inside for a week, and I know that my wife is sleeping with the bees.
Could you state that as a question, please?
Well, sure, Mr. President. Where can I get a job?
I would converse in polar bear and python, and I would curse in fluent kangaroo. If people ask me, can you speak rhinoceros? I'd say, of course-a-ros. Can't you? I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal. Think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals. Consulted with quadrupeds. Think what fun we'd have
asking over crocodiles for tea. Or maybe lunch with two or three lions, walruses or sea lions. What a lovely place the world would be. Spoke slang to orangutans. The advantages any fool on earth could plainly see. Discussing Eastern art and dramas with intellectual llamas, that's a big step forward, you'll agree. I'd learn to speak in antelope and turtle. My Pekingese would be extremely good.
He's dogged.
Hey! Oh, hey! I've got a dog. Hey, little fella. I know what. I'm going to call you Relent.
Then I won't be relentless anymore. Get it?
At Rolling and Blackout, they turn left.
Hey, that's my ankle. You trying to tell me something, little guy? Hey, calm down. You sound like a drunken French monkey. Wait. Oh, I get it. I got my hat over my third eye. Let me just lift it up and... How's that?
Ah, about time, you dumb dick.
Let's go.
At Bughouse and Nightingale, they turn right.
Hey, who's that?
That's my announcer.
You mean an imaginary being who speaks to you?
Well, it's too complicated to explain to a dog.
Species.
Skeptic.
Woof.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Smokey the Bear.
Don't bogart that joint. Pass it over to me, my friend.
Oh, boy, come on, David, read your story. Come
okay.
on, come on.
Once in the Jurassic, about 150 million years ago, the great Sun Buddha, in this corner of the infinite void, gave a great discourse to all the assembled elements and energies, to the standing beings, the walking beings, the flying beings, and the sitting beings, even grasses, to the number of 13 billion, each one born from a seed.
A lot of grasses.
All assembled there, a discourse concerning enlightenment on the planet Earth. He said, in some future time, there will be a continent called America. It will have great centers of power called such as Pyramid Lake, Walden Pond, Mount Rainier, Big Sur, Everglades, and so forth, and powerful nerves and channels such as Columbia River, Mississippi River, and Grand Canyon. The human race in that era will get into troubles all over its head and practically wreck everything in spite of its own strong, intelligent Buddha nature. The twisting strata of the great mountains and the pulsing of the great volcanoes are my love burning deep in the earth. My obstinate compassion is schist and basalt and granite to be mountains, to bring down the rain. In that future American era, I shall enter a new form to cure the world of loveless knowledge that seeks with blind hunger and mindless rage eating food that will not fill it. And he showed himself in his true form, Smokey the Bear. A handsome, smoky-colored, brown bear standing on his hind legs, showing that he is aroused and watchful. Bearing his right paw, the shovel that digs to the truth beneath appearances, cuts the roots of useless attachments, and flings damp sand on the fires of greed and war.
Watch it, Smokey.
His left paw, in the mudra of comradely display, indicating that all creatures have the full right to live to their limits, and that deer, rabbits, chipmunks, snakes, dandelions, and lizards all grow in the realm of the Dharma. Wearing the blue work overall, symbolic of slaves and laborers, the countless men oppressed by a civilization that claims to save but only destroys. Wearing the broad-brimmed hat of the West, symbolic of the forces that guard the wilderness, which is the natural state of the Dharma and the true path of man on earth. All true paths lead through mountains. With a halo of smoke and flame behind, the forest fires of the Kali Yuga, fires caused by the stupidity of those who think things can be gained and lost, whereas, in truth, all is contained vast and free in the blue sky and green earth of one mind. Round-bellied, to show his kind nature and that the great earth has food enough for everyone who loves her and trusts her, trampling underfoot wasteful freeways and needless suburbs, smashing the worms of capitalism and totalitarianism, indicating the task his followers, becoming free of cars, houses, canned food, universities, and shoes, master the three mysteries of their own body, speech, and mind, and fearlessly chop down the rotten trees and prune out the sick limbs of this country, America, and then burn the leftover trash. Wrathful but calm, austere but comic, Smokey the Bear will illuminate those who would help him. But for those who would hinder or slander him, he will put them out. Thus, his great mantra. I dedicate myself to the universal diamond, be this raging fury destroyed, and he will protect those who love woods and rivers, gods and animals, hobos and madmen, prisoners and sick people, musicians, playful women and hopeful children. And if anyone is threatened by advertising, air pollution, or the police, they should chant Smokey the Bear's war spell. Drown their butts. Crush their butts. 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 Drown their butts. And Smokey the Bear will surely appear to put the enemy out with his Vajra shovel. Now those who practice and recite this sutra and then try to put it in practice will accumulate merit as countless as the sands of Arizona and Nevada, will help save the planet Earth from total oil slick, will enter the age of harmony of man and nature, will win the tender love and caresses of men, women, and beasts, will always have ripe blackberries to eat and a sunny spot under a pine tree to sit at, and in the end will win highest, perfect, enlightenment. And thus we have heard.